This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here, Greg.
Let's start with the major political story as it has been throughout this congressional recess, and that's the health care debate. We saw a little bit of a shift in strategy this week, and now it seems the Democrats have considered going in opposite directions this week. At the start of the week, we saw Kathleen Sebelius, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, say, well, maybe the public option isn't all that essential. That's on the table, may not be part of a final bill. Now, a few days later, we're seeing the Democrats maybe thinking about using procedural rules to ram it through without any Republican support. What do you make of this?
Well, certainly, I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that so many of the components, the pillars of the modern Democratic Party, want public option and want a greater government hand in health care. This is non-negotiable, more so even than the so-called card check legislation that big labor so wanted. Rich Trumka, Secretary General of the AFL-CIO and heir apparent to its presidency, said last week that he would even take a walk on supporting Democratic lawmakers who do not back public option in the legislation. It seems at this point that the Senate Finance Committee is going to pass some kind of bill that will not have public option and will pay for enhanced health care by raising taxes on higher, more costlier health care packages. That means some of them held by, you guessed it, union members. Mr. Trumka says, we're opposed, it's a stupid idea. Democrats dance with who brung them. Obama is the new kid on the block. The unions have been there before he was there. They'll be there after. I hope that explains it.
Well, John, what do you see as the political ramifications of the opposite strategy, going it alone, maybe even splitting up the bill and using a reconciliation tactic to avoid the filibuster possibility? What kind of political fallout could the Democrats be looking at?
As Rocky the Flying Squirrel used to say, that never works. The fact is that they have to have a bill with everything in it. They wanted desperately to have something on Obama's desk by August. The more it split up, the more opportunity it gives the enemies of a stronger health care bill the opportunity to regroup and attack one by one and say, see, this is what Democrats want, and this is what they're really made of. It would force more public scrutiny, slow down the process even more, and allow their enemies to mobilize. I say it won't work.
Last question on the health care front. John, the president held a conference call with leaders in the faith community on Wednesday, and we'll see how much influence they have on this debate going forward. Not much criticism about any sort of breaching the wall of separation of church and state. Do you think it would have been different had the previous president conducted a conference call like this on a major legislative issue?
Oh, absolutely. Remember something. Bill Clinton and other Democrats have spoken in churches that generally are known to favor Democratic candidates for years. No one seemed to mind. There was no separation of church and state there. If a George W. Bush spoke to, say, the National Council of Evangelicals or invited Pat Robertson, let's say, or other prominent evangelical leaders, Rick Warren, who's also a friend of President Obama's, in, I think there would have been some controversy about it.
We're talking with John Gizzi of Human Events, and John, it was just last week off-air in just our regular casual discussion that I asked you if you knew how Bob Novak, the longtime syndicated columnist, was doing. Obviously, he'd been diagnosed with a brain tumor and had retired last year, and obviously, as you said last week, not well, and of course this week we learned of his passing at the age of 78. Your thoughts on a very significant journalistic career here in Washington?
Bob Novak would have probably bristled if you called him a pundit, or would be scandalized if you called him a talking head. While he did become famous primarily because of television, he'd been on the scene for more than a half a century, and he was first and foremost a reporter, or as I like to say, a newsman. He went after stories. He had his own view, going from centrist to conservative in later years, but always kept his views out of digging for a story. That's why he was welcomed by presidents of all parties, from John F. Kennedy and George W. Bush, why members of Congress always took his calls, and other local powers, say, for example, former FBI Director Louis Free, and he quoted them. The big thing is this. We find in the age of the net so many people who can pontificate and engage in punditry that we could say everyone is a pundit, but not everyone is a reporter. You learn something when you read Bob Novak's stories, which were the result of some hard digging. He's going to be missed, but hopefully he'll create another generation of Bob Novaks, and journalism will live on.
And John, let's move overseas now, and perhaps the most shocking news of the week, the one person convicted in connection with the dastardly 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, released on compassionate medical grounds because this person is apparently close to death due to prostate cancer. U.S. officials aghast at this. What do you make of it?
Well, again, this is a surprise, and humanitarian reasons are usually good in cases of people who are imprisoned, but when it comes to someone who is a mass murderer, and whom evidence overwhelmingly shows that, as was the case with Lockerbie, it's a bit of a shock. I'd like to see some of the reaction from the family members of those who perished in the Lockerbie disaster, what they think about this.
Well, they're certainly not happy about it. They're all over the cable news channels today wondering where the compassion was for their loved ones on board that flight, as many of them were even U.S. service members going home for Christmas some 21 years ago, and they didn't get a whole lot of compassion from the terrorists, so they're wondering why the terrorist is getting that today. John, elsewhere in the war on terror, we saw some eruptions of violence, certainly in Iraq, with 95 people dying on Wednesday, and some violence keeping voters away in Afghanistan. Your thoughts on those twin stories in the war on terror?
In the first Afghani election, which saw President Karzai elected, more than 70% of eligible voters turned out to the polls, which made a very dramatic statement about how that country was taking to democracy. Unfortunately, the turnout today is going to be much smaller, but that doesn't mean it will be honest and it will work. So many people are daring bullets, daring bombs, just to exercise their rights as citizens. I don't know what the outcome will be. I suspect that President Karzai will be forced into a runoff. But I think that, in spite of the dangers, a strong turnout will show that democracy will survive, even when under intense fire.
John, unfortunately, we'll have to call time there. Thank you, sir, as always, for being with us.
As I strive to find things to talk about other than health care and say a fond 30, what we close newspapers with, to Bob Novak, I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi is political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.